Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. We hope to have you get enough information so you can take control of you and your family's health. And perfect segue, if you will, to introduce Bill Marler. Bill is an accomplished personal injury and liability attorney, but he is, and he's also the managing partner of Marter Clark, Seattle, Washington. But he's the most prominent food safety lawyer in the U.S., major force in food policy in this country, and he's represented victims in virtually every one of the major foodborne illnesses, notably the Taco Bell E. coli, and of course the current Chipotle and even Costco problems. Mr. Marler, thanks for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure.
I know you have a website and a blog that you do on this, and we'll get to that in a few minutes because I found it very interesting. But what I want to ask you about now is, do you think we're seeing more problems with food safety than we did, say, 30 years ago or less? And what's the change?
You know, when I first started doing these cases back in 1993, so 22 years ago, with the Jack in the Box case, it was really the time when we had much better surveillance of foodborne illness, and a lot of the technology that exists today allows us to really count more effectively foodborne illnesses. So in some respects, all of what appears to be outbreak after outbreak and recall after recall has a lot to do, not necessarily with the wheels of the bus coming off on food safety, but it's really that we're so much better at surveilling illnesses. And so in some respects, I would argue that even though it appears on the surface that things are really bad, in some respects, we're just better at counting it.
Now, food safety obviously involves the home as well. And one of the things, clearly, there have been a lot of public safety announcements about washing pre-cut food and washing this and not cutting the chicken in your home before you cook it, et cetera.
Right.
Do these actually have effect? Are people, do we know whether people are following these? Because I noted in, of the six foods you won't have, some of those involve pre-cut and pre-cooked food.
Well, I think we need to always continually try to educate the public about, you know, reasonable risks and things that they can do to effectively protect themselves and their families. And, you know, if you focus on, you know, pre-cut, pre-packaged products, I one time did a blog post entitled, you know, "Is Convenience Worth the Risk?" I guess I'm old enough to remember, you know, when you would only be able to buy certain vegetables and fruits at certain times of the year because they weren't in season. Now everything's in season because we get our products, you know, 24/7, 365 from all over the world. Walk into a grocery store, and it's pretty unlikely that something won't be available. The other thing that is happening is, you know, instead of us buying a bunch of lettuce and spinach and washing it on our own, you know, we buy it in bulk and buy it in bags. It's already been handled for us. I'll give you an example. In 2006, there was a nationwide outbreak of E. coli 015787 linked to spinach. 205 people sick. Five of those people unfortunately died. There were about 30 people who developed acute kidney failure. So it was a significant outbreak. It ultimately was linked to one 20-acre spinach, organic spinach farm that had had some animal intrusion in a small portion of that field, but that field had been harvested collectively, put in crates, and then washed and bagged in a facility, shipped across the country, and that's, you know, how the outbreak happened. The E. coli wasn't uniformly spread all over that 25 acres of spinach, and had the spinach grown into bunches and the bunches cut and sold in grocery stores all over the country, the likelihood of having an outbreak where people would take that spinach home and wash it and sell it individually, chances of having an outbreak would be virtually eliminated. So ultimately, convenience is simply, in my view, not worth the risk.
Well, what you're implying to me is that people who take the spinach home that's been pre-cut and pre-washed don't rewash it and do things with it in their own home to clean it before they use it. Is that the implication?
Well, it's not only the implication, but the companies actually, many of the companies, frankly, encourage you not to wash it again. And some of it's triple washed and bagged, and so the implication, direct or indirect, by the companies that are selling it, is that the consumer doesn't need to do that. So I just think that my view is that take the few minutes and wash it yourself.
Now, when I used to, way back in the 70s when I was doing research at the National Institute of Health, and even in the 80s doing it in San Francisco, used to go to slaughterhouses to get adrenal glands for making specific enzymes. And I was always impressed that there was an attempt made to keep the place very clean, but that there was almost inevitable contamination, and that the inspectors were not exactly on the floor. They were, the one inspector at each of the plants was processing paperwork the majority of the time in an office that was just off of the, if you will, the slaughter or cutting floor. Have we reduced the, is that part of the problem? We don't have people who are actively doing surveillance, or is that a really small part of the problem?
Well, from 2000, or 1993 to about 2003, about 90% of what my firm did was E. coli cases linked to hamburger. And today that's nearly zero. And it's not like some other lawyers doing them. They just aren't there, which is a real positive thing. But what it did was, having those inspectors in those plants, having the federal government say that E. coli is an adulterant, and, having industry step up to come up with methodologies to eliminate the pathogens, specifically from the hides and the exterior of the carcass of the animal, that's really driven, E. coli 015787. Not completely, but fairly limited amount of bacteria you'll find in E. coli or in hamburger now. And I think that's been a really positive impact. And I think it's something that the rest of the food industry can learn. It's really a collaboration of, government and industry and consumers that it's really driven that positive change.
When we come back, we're going to be taking a break right now for important messages, but when we come back with Bill Marler, managing partner, Marler Clark, Seattle, Washington, the most prominent food safety lawyer in the country, we're going to talk a little bit about Chipotle and Costco and foods he wouldn't eat, and then what he would advise all of us to do differently. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual radio show on Radio MD, where we hope we give you enough knowledge to stay well.
And now, back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. We've been talking with the expert. This is someone, I've had people on the show who are food experts from Cornell, food experts from other academic institutions who teach courses for, if you will, the culinary medicine profession, who teach it for people who are running hotels, running food companies, about food safety. But I think we really have the expert, Bill Marwer, managing partner, Marter Clark, Seattle, Washington, because he's been the most prominent food safety lawyer probably in the last, 22 years, since the Jack in the Box cases with E. coli started, and can tell us an awful lot about what we should do differently because of all these cases he's been involved in and situations. He writes a blog. It's called Marter, Marler, blog, blog.com, www.marlerblog.com. Really has, I looked at it and clicked on it. It has some great stories on it. Bill, if I can use your first name, tell us a little bit about what's going on with Chipotle, and they've pledged to make themselves the best in the industry, but what happened to make them not the best right now?
Well, I think they were so focused on natural and organic and non-GMO and sustainable and humanely raised, all of which are fine things to focus on. But I think they sort of took their eye off the food safety ball, or at least thought that if they were doing those other things, that would make their food safe. And I think what happened is taking their eye off the ball, allowed them to be involved in six different foodborne illness outbreaks in 6 months, salmonella, norovirus, and E. coli. And obviously it's rocked their business to its knees. And I'm hoping, because I think the business model is a good one, I'm hoping that they're able to pick themselves up and, do exactly what they said they're going to do, is make themselves, a leader in food safety.
And what you describe is just, you say, by taking your eye off the ball. We've got to do that at home, too. First of all, when you go out to eat, many of us don't eat in chain restaurants. I guess the chains do it a little better, but and I don't know whether that's true or not, but it seems to me that the employees in the kitchen can contaminate food awful easily. And as I read the statistics, with it being 48 million Americans are sick from foodborne bugs, and I guess 128,000 people get hospitalized once a year for this. It's still a huge problem from restaurant food. Is that right?
Restaurant food and home cooking, I think all people need to sort of, pay attention to what they can do. And, if asked, my thoughts with respect to, going out to restaurants is we have a lot more information available to us to decide where we want to eat that's safe, for not only safe, but good. There's a lot of social media, Yelp, and that's out there that talks about, how that restaurant is operating and whether people have had problems. A lot of cities have online, the health department reports on given restaurants. So you can eat pretty defensively by gathering information from that restaurant. Also, if you're like me, I travel the world. I'm always somewhere, and I do pay attention to trying to simplify what I eat when I'm out to limit my risk of getting sick. And, I think there are a handful of things.
What do you mean by simple? Give me a hint what you mean by.
Sure. I'll give you an example. I was having dinner the other night at a really nice restaurant with some lawyers. We had been fighting all day in court, and we went out to dinner at night. And, I skipped the salad, because not that I don't like salad, but I rather eat my salad at home where I can control the environment. So I skipped the salad, but I had a well-cooked steak, a nice glass of wine, and I had cooked vegetables for dinner. All things that, were things that were cooked and, you know, reduced my risk of a bacterial infection.
I'm an inveterate, in addition to cooked vegetables and well-cooked ocean trout and salmon, mm-hmm. I also am an inveterate salad eater. And what you're telling me is I maybe should get, if you will, roasted beet salad or some salad or roasted mushrooms rather than mm-hmm. the raw salad that I usually have.
Sure. No, I think, the kind of the simple things is, keeping things clean is always a good thing. But, keep things hot things hot and cold things cold. And, control the things that you can control. And, again, I have more faith in my wife and I in our own kitchen controlling things. So I might take a little bit more, in a sense, a little more risk at home than I would at a restaurant where I'm, turning over that responsibility to people I have no idea who they are. So, and I think, we can avoid a lot by, being a little bit more defensive.
Gotcha. But you, what I'm trying to probe on is you feel so strongly about that salad that you don't have it when you eat out.
Correct.
I did read this blog where there's six foods you won't have and one that I was surprised you did have. And I want to just go over the one you do have, which is although you won't eat pre-cut food that isn't rewashed, you will have sushi.
Yeah, and I know that's a little maybe counterintuitive, but it's really sort of based on experience. In 22 years of, handling most foodborne illness cases, there have been just a handful of those fish-related. And I'm not suggesting, getting sushi that you get at a grocery store or at a 7-Eleven. I would avoid that like the plague. What I would suggest is a good sushi restaurant that has a good history. That is really what I think is fair. It's fair to go out there and eat that because I think the risk, there is some risk, but the risk is quite low.
Now, I wanted to, and we can debate that the next time I need you back on.
I'd love to.
Because one of the things I wanted to talk about is mislabeling. When you look at the data on wild versus farm-raised salmon, when you look on the data of, if you will, the type of fish you get with sushi and the USDA DNA typing data, why aren't we doing something to get the labeling more accurate? And is there a way for us to do it on a consumer basis to push grocery stores, fish markets, even restaurants to get it better? We've been talking with Bill Marwer, author of Marwer Blog.